Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is your host, Monk. You can find out more at my website, allbook-books.com. So this little episode is titled Touching the Surface of Poetic Language, English, Native, Chinese, Japanese, Greek. And touching the surface because it's not even scraping the surface, and also because touching is the emotional layer of language and poetry that for me was one of the things that got me into wanting to write poetry, was a certain feel or emotion that I heard in other poets that stirred my emotions, and the typical artisty kind of thing, like, I want to do that too. So some of my background is I got a BA in English from a college, and that was like a B minus average, which basically equated to an A minus in creative writing and like a C or a C plus or C something in the other parts. So I guess that's played out with the kind of work I do. But part of my point is to say that the technicalities of the school system can be helpful, and yet there's a limitation to them, as I learned from exploring over the years and continue exploring the fascination with different languages and the consciousness that they convey. So that's some of the point of this. First, a couple of examples of some of the poetry that stirred me emotionally. Two poets come to mind. One is Gerard Manley Hopkins, a Jesuit, English Jesuit, and his sound and rhythm and rhyme, internal rhymes, which in a way predates hip-hop, which I actually wrote an essay about that called Hip Hop Hopkins. He was writing in the mid to latter 19th century, so his rhythm and rhyme, again, is certainly ahead of its time. It's what he called sprung rhythm. You can look up what that means. One of his examples is a poem called Spring. Nothing is so beautiful as spring, when weeds in wheels shoot long and lovely and lush. Thrushes' eggs look little low heavens, and thrush through the echoing timber does so rinse and ring the ear. It strikes like lightnings to hear him sing. The glassy pear tree leaves and blooms they brush, the descending blue, that blue is all in a rush. With richness, the racing lambs too have fair their fling. So there's others of his poems where I'm looking up words because I don't know what he's talking about, but still I love it. And then Dylan Thomas, his rhythm and sort of forward motion of the language, his use, one of his most famous poems, "The force that through the green fuse drives the flower." And then he goes on to say, "The force that drives the water through the rocks drives my red blood, that dries the mouthing streams turns mine to wax. And I am dumb to mouth unto my veins, how at the mountain spring the same mouth sucks." So here I think he's getting into that interrelatedness with the natural world, which I find a lot of poetry kind of dulls out when it's just about nature or descriptions of nature, whereas conveying the feeling and the interrelatedness is a deeper level of poetic thing for me anyway. And then over the years I've learned little bits and pieces from hearing native or indigenous people talk about their language, and it's quite fascinating. A couple of examples that come to mind, because I think there is a poetic, I think my theory is that writing poetry in English is a way that people are grasping for their indigeneity, their deeper connection with the land, but they don't always know it, in a deeper consciousness, though they don't always know it. So one example is from a Lakota friend, Teokasin Ghost Horse, who hosts First Voices Radio, a wonderful weekly radio show. And in the Lakota language, he says there's no word for love, which at first is kind of a head scratcher. But then he says it's, okay, this is very loose translation, it would be something like, "You are my skin." Now when I heard that, I thought, wow, that's so beautiful and so visceral. compared to the abstract word of love. So that's one example. Another example, I heard a Mohawk Chief Tom Porter at a presentation saying how in the Mohawk language, there's no word for the color green. And that happens over and over and over again. I hear Native people, Indigenous people say there's no word like this in our language. So there's a very different consciousness going on. So again, the poeticness, and I'm not saying the Native language is just poetic, but just that to me, as from this poetry angle, the poeticness comes out. And in Mohawk, he said that, so if a woman was wearing a dress, to describe the color, it would be something like, the dress is the color of the grass in springtime. So there you have a lightish green rather than a darker summer green. And just the rhythm of that in English to me is quite poetic. The dress is the color of the grass in springtime. So there's a whole world of a world opening up in there for languages. And also another flavor of languages that I have learned in, again, this is barely touching the surface, from another Native friend, Stephen Newcomb, who is Shawnee and Lenape, who has an excellent book, Pagans in the Promised Land. And I've heard him say that I think like 70% of the English language is from Latin. So in essence, most of what we're speaking and writing in is a language of the empire and a foreign language as far as all the languages and nations of that are now of what some call United States, what natives call Turtle Island, that there are, you know, homegrown languages here, and it's worth knowing at least something to respect the people and to open your consciousness to the energies of the land. Then jumping around to another culture where I think this overarching theme here is how the language is, in its deeper sense, languages are connected with the land and with the energies rather than the abstractions. So here is in my studies of brush calligraphy and ancient Chinese pictographs. The ancient Chinese, the word for poetry or song or ode comes from, it's a combination of two pictures, word plus temple. So there's obviously a sacredness to poetry, song, and ode. And the picture of the word shows a mouth with word or speech being spoken from the tongue. And what is meant by temple shows a plant growing from the ground, and below that a hand signifying the natural law or an offering. So that's a sort of, that's like a non-religious sense of temple, that it's literally the earth and plant and the growing and the natural laws is the root of the poetry and the song. Then jumping over to Japanese and haiku, where haiku have a lot of nature imagery and what's called the season word, identifying the season. In his book, The Essential Haiku, Versions of Basho, Busan, and Issa, the editor Robert Haas writes, "My personal theory, not especially well informed about Kigo, the season word, is that their origin is shamanic, animist, and ritualistic. That the words for winter blast and spring blossoms and summer shower were intended at one time to call forth the living spirits manifested in those natural phenomena." So again, this is not just describing or saying, oh, I saw lovely this or that. It's not after the fact. In a way, it's before the fact. Sort of, yeah, like he says, calling forth and calling to the living spirit, helping to bring about the manifestation of the flowers, of the fruits, and of what nurtures us, the medicine plants and all. And then he goes on to say, and quoting another guy, Morris, "And in the culture, they became the basis, as Morris said, for a calendar of festivals, a liturgy of the seasons that told people, both high and low, how they were at home in the world and what powers they moved among." So again, this is the poetic sense from the earth that is interrelated with how we live, not some abstract, you know, just mere description. And the Basho haiku that reflects that, "The beginning of art, a rice planting song in the back country. The beginning of art, a rice planting song in the back country." And another example, also from the Tao, the Chinese, the Tao Te Ching, which again is it's more than, it's poetic, but it's more than poetry. It is it has a guidance and a life teaching in it So a little quote from a version, the Tao Te Ching, another way of pronouncing Tao Te Ching: the great benevolence is like water. It benefits the myriad things, yet seeks to occupy the lowest places, which are not wanted by the egos of the people. Therefore, it is nearby to people like thou. So the Tao, the philosophy, the way is humble, like the water, seeking the lowest places. And another friend who was versed in Greek, ancient Greek, which I barely know anything, but one of my favorites of his was the word idiot. In Greek, idiotes, I think pronounced idiote, that actually means away from the sanctuary, or away or outside of the sanctuary or the sacred place. So again, that's the same recurring theme here, and now I freely use the word idiot, not in a negative sense towards someone, but in a way to say that that person, their consciousness is away from the sanctuary or the deep respect and interrelatedness with the earth and all the beings. So obviously, when we look at what's going on with the world, there is an epidemic of idiots and idiot consciousness. So the language is a starting point, whether it's poetic or not, the language is a starting point to help reclaim and reconnect with that kind of consciousness. And I'll leave it with one more quote from recent. This guy was on the First Voices Radio, an Anishinaabe plant medicine guy, and a very interesting statistic, a very interesting quote about a statistic. If you look at a map of the distribution of languages around the world and you compare it with maps that show the distribution of mammal species or bird species, you see an extraordinarily similar picture. The hotspots of linguistic diversity in so many cases coincide with hotspots of biological diversity. And that's from an article. This plant medicine teacher is reclaiming Anishinaabe names for species. Why that could be good for the planet. So the linguistic diversity, the languages are connected to the biological diversity. So knowing how to name the plants, knowing what their names are. Not just the Latin names, but in other language, you know, whatever language you're from, knowing the names and what those mean and what that tells you is all part of helping to bring and restore balance with the way we walk with the earth. So thanks for listening and have a good one.